And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the inner sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. It is 9 minutes after the 11 p.m. hour on February 20th, 2016. Lisa Wolf, this is program 53 of the WGN Radio Theater. That's the name of our program. Did you know that?
I did, and I'm excited to be here again. It's
you
another
knew that?
Saturday night of the WGN
very
Theater
good.
Right here at WGN.
Yeah. It's very bubbly on Saturday here. There's a lot of activity going on, and there's tons of people walking by here on Michigan Avenue at 435 North Michigan Avenue, and we are in the fishbowl. We're in the All-State studio here on the legendary Radio 720 WGN, and we're going to play classic radio shows all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to do it again tomorrow, Sunday, from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. We're here on Saturdays and Sundays. That's our time slot, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m., and we play six classic radio shows, all your favorites. Now, tonight, we're going to tune into Richard Diamond, Private Detective, a series created by Blake Edwards and starring Dick Powell. Then it's a terrific comedy on Duffy's Tavern, starring Ed Gardner. And then Orson Welles is Harry Lime on The Lives of Harry Lime. It was the radio version of his movie, The Third Man. That's coming your way tonight here on the WGN Radio Theater. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
Finding Dory is an upcoming computer animated comedy adventure. It takes place about 1 year after the 2003 film Finding Nemo and features this actress as the voice of Jenny, Dory's mother.
All right, so if you can tell us who this actress is, you're going to win something, right, Lisa?
Yes, a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's Pizza.
What's the difference between a gift certificate and a gift card? Any difference? Or no?
Certificate has four syllables.
Oh, that's what it is. All right, you still get the same kind of pizza if you want, right?
Right.
Okay.
Maybe.
So the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. You will hear this actress right now in a scene with Woody Allen. And Woody Allen's trying to kill a spider in her bathroom. Take a listen.
Hey, don't squish it. And after it's dead, flush it down the toilet, okay? And flush it a couple of times.
All right. So give us a call right now. Tell us who that actress is. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Hey, don't squish it. And after it's dead, flush it down the toilet, okay? And flush it a couple of times.
Maria, we've got Maria on the line. Are you with us?
Hello.
Hello.
Diane Keaton.
Yes, indeed. You are absolutely correct. And Maria, you are a winner. You have won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Congratulations, Maria. It's the best pizza around.
Thank you.
Thanks, Maria. All right, Lisa Wolf. You ready for our first classic radio show?
Yes, let's get into Richard Diamond.
Richard Diamond, Private Detectives, created by Blake Edwards. He was the director of all the Pink Panther movies with Peter Sellers. Came to NBC Radio in 1949, and it starred actor crooner Dick Powell as Richard Diamond. And he played Philip Marlowe in RKO's movie Murder, My Sweet. And they thought, hey, this guy would be great for this character of Richard Diamond, private detective. And Diamond was a New York-based detective, and he loved to rib the cops and sing songs to his millionaire's girlfriend, Helen Asher, played by Virginia Gregg. And the theme, Lisa, Leave It to Love, was actually whistled by Powell at the beginning and end of the show. So this is Powell you'll hear whistling. And his production company later created a TV series of this, but it starred David Janssen, who, of course, would later go on to play on bigger shows on TV, including what? Do you know? You know what show David Janssen was really popular on?
I don't.
All right. Well, I'll tell you a little later. I'll let you think about
it.
I'll let you
leave
marinate.
Me hanging?
Yeah, I'll let you marinate a little bit. The Fugitive. All right. So let's tune this in now. June 19th, 1949. It's called the Fred Sears Case. Here's part one of Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
As Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Hello there. My name's Diamond, and I'm known along the big street as a guy who manages to keep his nose pretty clean and still make a few bucks while I'm doing it. Oh, sure, it gets a little grimy, but you've got to expect that. I'm a shamus, private eye, gumshoe. To the guy who hasn't ever been worried because he tripped over a corpse in his breakfast nook, I'm known as a private detective. And to some guys, I'm known by a lot of other names. Not the kind you would find in a book on manners and social usages. But there are times when you might turn up on your desk calendar under the heading of what I must do today. Who hires me? How do I make a living? Well, maybe this will give you an idea.
Fred, why don't you eat your toast? It's getting cold.
Why don't you stop worrying about the temperature of my breakfast? I'm trying to read the paper.
Did anyone ever tell you how charming it is to have breakfast with you every morning?
Yeah. My ulcers.
I'd like to go shopping today. Will you leave me some money? Fred, did you hear me?
Mary, I'm reading.
Well, stop reading and listen to me for a minute. I need some new summer clothes and I want to go shopping today.
Yeah. Here's $10. Buy yourself a bathing suit.
Oh, that's very funny.
Hmm?
I need more than $10. I want $500.
What kind of a bathing suit are you going to buy, me?
I'm not going to buy a bathing suit. I need some new clothes. Will you put down that paper and listen to me?
Well, I see you made Jimmy Cello's column again, my darling.
What?
What prominent socialite is fighting with her wealthy husband and crying on the shoulder of a big-time playboy after the arguments?
That's supposed to be me?
Can you remember 5 minutes in the past 5 years when we haven't been fighting?
Are you accusing me of running around with some playboy?
Running around is right. I expect one of you to be the first to do a four-minute mile.
How dare you?
How dare me? Why, you lushed-up little tramp.
Tramp?
Yeah, tramp. Everybody in town knows you're seeing Lauren Oliver.
All right, so I've been seeing him. We're just friends.
Well, that kind of friendship is grounds for divorce in this state.
Why, you dirty...
I'm sick of this whole rotten mess. And I'm going to do something about it.
You're going to do something about it? Why, you conceited, pompous... You're going to do something, are you? Well, you better hurry up, because I've got some ideas of my own.
Yeah?
Lauren.
Yeah, Mary?
I got to talk to you.
What time is
10 o'clock.
Well, it's still the middle of the night. Call me back
this
later.
This can't wait. Fred found an item about us in Jimmy Cello's column this morning. He stormed out of here like he was going to kill somebody.
Well, you're just the gal who can recognize the symptoms.
Well, that's a nasty line.
What do you want at 10 in the morning, Longfellow? Look, honey, I'll take care of Cello, and if that husband of yours gets out of line, I'll take care of him, too.
You see what I mean? If things like that didn't happen, I'd be out of business. I'll lay you 8 to 5 that before 3 o'clock this afternoon, one of those charming people will be walking into my office begging for help. Yeah?
Rick?
Oh, hello, Helen, baby.
Hi. You gonna take me out tonight?
Sure. I'll be over later. We'll have a quiet evening.
No, I want to go dancing tonight. If you don't take me, I'll throw a tantrum.
But, baby, I don't have the cash. I'm tapped this week.
Well, won't let me take you. Borrow it from Francis. You told me yourself he was good in a bench.
Yeah, but he's already black and blue from those 3 lunches at Lindy's. Besides, he's not only your butler, but he's a darn good businessman. He wants security.
Well, I'll give it to him.
He's already got my badge. My book on the 10 best ways to sneak through transoms, complete with illustrations, and my gun.
Haven't you got something else?
Yeah, but I'm saving the right eye in case of an emergency. Keyholes, you know. Look, honey, let's go take in a quiet movie and...
I want to get dressed up and go to a nightclub. It's summer. The flowers are blooming and the fox has left his lair.
His what?
Oh, I've been hibernating all winter and I want to get out into some nice, smoke-filled dance floor.
Why, Helen...
Why, Helen, nothing. Please,
Rick. Hold it. Someone's knocking at my chamber door. Come in.
Mr. Diamond?
Yeah, pull up a chair. I'll be right with you.
Who is it?
I'm afraid to look. I haven't paid the light bill.
This is a detective agency, isn't it?
You, sir, have just won yourself a new economy home-size murder sampler, complete with a matching set of bodies.
Me?
No.
I haven't got time to listen to your bright remarks, Diamond. I want to hire you.
What did he say?
It isn't like my bright remarks. You won't even admit they're bright.
What else?
No, something about wanting to,
Something about what?
What was that last statement, sir? It sounded rather cozy.
I said I wanted to hire you.
What?
I'll call you later, baby. Bye.
Wait a minute.
Now, Mr. Sears. Mr. Sears, what can I do for you?
I want you to follow my wife.
Will I like the view?
She's running around with another man.
Well, if they're just running around, don't worry about it. It's when they get tired and slow down that things start to pop.
There was a veiled article in Jimmy Cello's column this morning about my wife and this man.
Yeah, I know Cello.
So do I, but I'm not interested in Cello at the moment.
Well, what do you want? Enough on your wife so you can get a divorce?
Yes.
Oh, well, that comes kind of high. I don't like cases like this, and I usually turn them down. If you want me to swallow my pride, it'll take a $200 retainer and $100 a day in expenses.
I'll write you a check.
Oh, just like that, huh?
I am quite wealthy. Hmm. That's why I want the divorce, Mr. Diamond. There you are.
Yes, sir. There I am. Now, what's the man's name that your wife is seeing?
His name is Lorne Oliver.
Well, this is turning into a family gathering.
You know him?
Sure, runs the Monarch Club.
That's right.
What's your wife's name, and where can I get a look at her?
Mary Sears. You can see her tonight at the Stork. We'll be there for dinner, 9 o'clock.
I'll be there. Oh, incidentally, that comes under the heading of expenses, in case you have a short memory.
I have a good memory, Mr. Diamond. You can send me the bill.
Oh. Address and phone number?
45 East 65th Street.
45 East 65.
Evergreen 41793.
41793.
Now I've got to be going. Goodbye, Mr. Diamond.
Goodbye, Mr. Sears. Yeah?
What'd you hang up on me for?
Honey, this is because you always give me an argument. You never want to go anywhere. I'm getting tired of shows and hot dogs. I want to go dancing.
What?
And I don't mean Roseland. I want to go to the Stork. I'm a growing boy, and I like to see the bright lights and throw my money around.
But, Rick, you said...
I'll pick you up at 8:30, and this time, don't wear slacks.
You're an idiot.
Bye, idiot. Yes, that's the way it goes, just as I told you. The word private in front of detective means you're married to all the troubles in the world, and that includes everything. So if a guy turns up who's unhappy with his wife, you listen to him howl, and if he's got enough money, you take the job. It's for better or for worse. And until Mr. Sears came in, it was decidedly one-sided. I'd teach cooking to a bunch of headhunters for a fee like the one he'd given me. When I looked at his $200 check, I started getting that big man complex again. So I closed the office and went back to my flat. We'd probably be up late, and Helen always had some extracurricular activities after we'd get back to her place. You know, roasting marshmallows, fast game of canasta, or an exciting round of Emmys on the living room rug. Anyway, I always got home pretty late in the a.m., so I spent the rest of the afternoon taking naps. At 6 o'clock, I got up and dressed, and at 8:30, I picked up Helen. Wow. And at 9 o'clock, we were sitting at the Stark Club bar, right on schedule.
Rick, when are you going to ask for a table?
Well, honey, the drinks come faster here.
But I want to dance.
Oh, now. Mustn't overdo it, lover. How do you know? Maybe some mountain climber will ask you on a 20-mile hike tomorrow. Think of your feet.
I am. I want to move them around that dance floor. Oh, Rick, I know you. You do something, you do it all the way.
Yeah, let's nick.
Oh, now you stop that. You're on a job, and you don't want to go in there because you've got to watch somebody.
Well, Helen Asher, how are you, darling? Well,
hello, Lauren. How have you been?
Oh, couldn't be better. Why don't you ever stop over to my club? I'd like to show you around.
She just brought a seeing eye dog. Oh, hello, Diamond.
You two know each other, don't you?
Yes. How did we make such a grisly mistake, Oliver?
I don't know. I tried taking penicillin for it, but it didn't do much good.
Well, it probably helped out in the other things. Why don't you try hanging yourself?
Well.
You always did think you were a pretty funny man, didn't you, Diamond?
It's easy being a comic. You just find an idiot for an audience. How do you like the performance?
Stinks. Pardon me, Helen, but I see some people I know. You'll excuse me, won't you, Diamond?
Oh, sure, yes. But the next time you drop around, bring some Airwick, huh?
Rick, even if you don't like him, you shouldn't say those things. He's liable to start a fight.
Oh, he wouldn't take a swing at a midget if he was riding an elephant.
I wonder who his friends are. They don't seem to be too glad to see him.
The name's Sears.
Is that who you're watching?
Yeah, the wife.
I don't know whether I approve or not. She's very attractive.
Isn't she, though?
Rick!
This is business, baby. Business. I'm only drooling because I haven't had anything to eat since this morning.
Well, then let's get a table. You've seen her. You've observed what she's doing. Now let's get something to eat.
Wait a minute. Here comes somebody else I know.
Where?
Standing at the check room.
The little man?
Yeah, here he comes.
Who is he?
Name's Cello, Jimmy Cello. Writes a gossip column.
I read it all the time.
Yeah? Hello, Jimmy.
Well, a Broadway sham. As soon as the lovely redhead, Diamond.
Helen, meet James Cello, but be careful what you say. Jimmy, Helen Asher.
Hello, Mr. Cello.
How do you do? Is this an item, Rick?
If I don't get us a table soon, she's going to make me give back her sorority pin.
Oh, speaking of tables, I see some people I know. Nice meeting you, Miss Asher.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Diamond.
Bye, Jimmy.
Rick, he's going over to see your table.
Hello, Walter. Hi, doll. Hi. Well, good evening.
What do you want, Cello?
Oh, I just dropped by to see how the happy little family was getting along.
Well, just drop away. Nobody asked you to stop by.
Yeah, why don't you do that and take Oliver here with you? Nobody asked him to stop by
Fred,
either.
Fred, keep your voice down.
This is my table, and I don't like a lot of crumbs lying all over it.
Who's a crumb?
Come on, Lorne. I guess Mr. Sears has forgotten a few things.
I haven't forgotten a thing, Cello. When you print one thing in that lying sheet of yours, and I'll have you sued for life.
Listen, Sears, if I did print anything, they'd put you away so far they'd have to pipe air into you.
Oh, do go on, Mr. Cello. This is getting interesting.
You'd better get out of here, Cello.
No. Go on, Cello. What have you got on old money bag?
He's a lying, dirty gossip monger. He doesn't have a thing.
Wait a minute. I don't like that. Why don't you ask your husband about North Africa sometime, Mrs. Sears?
Why? Just a minute.
Fred, stop it. Fred.
All right, now pick yourself up and get out of here, Cello.
Maybe you're right. I've got a column to get out. It'll be all about you, Sears, in big type.
Come on, get out.
How about me? You gonna throw me out, too?
You can bet your life I am.
I'm getting out of here.
You stay right where you are.
Don't talk that way to Mary.
I'll talk any way I like to my wife.
Lorne, maybe you'd better leave. Here come the waiters.
Now it's I'm gonna push this fat slob's face in.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Come on, break it up. Come on. Hey, waiter, give me a hand.
Come on.
Take your hands off me, Diamond.
Now calm down, Mr. Sears.
I'll kill that slob.
Oliver, you shut up or I'll pull your pants up over your head and shove you in a glass like a breadstick.
I don't like people meddling in my affairs, Diamond. You're fired.
I'm what?
You heard me. Now take your filthy hands off me.
Well, you were lily white before I palmed that check of yours this morning. You can have it back. Here, eat it.
What? I'll have you in jail for this, Diamond.
Why? It isn't every day you get to eat a $200 check.
Oh, Rick, let's get out of here.
Yeah, I'm sorry, baby, but that's what happens when you go to work for a hyena like Sears. You think he's a nice guy because he laughs so much. But you find out later it's only because he chewed your leg off.
Man, they were arguing like you and I argue.
I know.
Like cats and dogs there.
I was hearing
they'd
you there.
Fight. He stuck a $200 check in the guy's mouth. Richard Diamond, private detective. The Fred Sears case. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. But first, let's pay some bills. All right, welcome back. Thank you, David, to the WGN Radio Theater. I'm Carl Amari, your host. Lisa Wolf, my co-host here. Looking vivacious.
That's it? Just vivacious?
Yeah, no, and beautiful.
And
vivacious,
beautiful.
Bubbly, talented, not tall, which is good. I don't like people that are too tall. No.
Right. And as long as they're not taller than you are, we're okay.
This is true. You are,
and I won't
you are
mention
a couple
your
of inches
height.
Tall, shorter than I am. And then we have Mike Costello, who is taller than me, that's for sure. But that's okay. And then he's our executive producer. And then Shane Reardon's in there. He's our producer. And Shane is taller than me also. Yes. What a talented group of people I surround myself with. They do their best to make me sound good.
How are we doing?
Not well.
Not well.
No, not too no. well. You need to step it up a little bit.
Step it up. All right. Whatever you say, sir.
But these classic radio shows sound good. And you know why they sound good?
I sure do.
Because Mike Costella spends a lot of time making sure that they sound as clear, crystal clear as they do. Right, Mike?
Absolutely.
And we appreciate that. And I know our listeners do, too, because there's a lot of classic radio out there. You can get these shows, you know, different places, hear them on the radio. But I am telling you right now, nobody puts classic radio on the air in better sound than Mike Costella, our executive producer.
Nobody so. Does. I've heard different versions of some of these shows.
You are amazing. And we always use the master recording, so that's why you get what you hear. But let's get back to this now. June 19th, 1949, the Fred Sears case. It stars Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
We left Sears still spitting out pieces of the check I'd shoved down his throat and headed for Helen's apartment. I was sore. When I get hot under the collar, I don't make for good company. So I dropped her off with a kiss and went back to my flat and climbed in the sack. I smoked a dozen cigarettes before I got to sleep. And when I finally did, it must have been with a big smile on my face. All night, I kept dreaming that Lauren Oliver and Fred Sears were beating themselves to death with hot paper sacks. This is a Sunshine Market. Locke's popovers are specialty.
Now, you stop clowning and get over here right away.
Walt?
Lieutenant Levinson.
Oh, wow.
Where are you?
I'm in your office.
Yeah? What if any clients come in? Give them a good sales talk. Tell them how many people you've killed or something.
There's a guy in your office now.
Prospect?
Depends on what you're talking about. I think his name is Fred Sears.
Tell him to go home. He canned me last night.
I don't think he'll listen.
All right. So he's sore.
He's got a right to be.
Stop acting like an idiot, Walt. You know I didn't have anything to do with it.
I know you didn't, but we find the stiff in your office and we get a report that he fired you last night, but you had a fight with him. I gotta tell the commissioner something, Rick.
Tell him Sergeant Otis is teething.
Now, you stop that.
Now, what do you know about the killing?
The coroner just left. He said that Sears had been dead about 8 hours. The cleaning woman found him at 9 this morning and called us.
That puts the time of the murder around 1 a.m.
We found this, clenched in the dead man's hand.
What is it?
An article torn out of the morning papers.
Here, read it.
Ah,
Jimmy Cholo's column.
Read it.
All right, I will. Don't yell at me. Ah, Fred Sears, wealthy import-export man, is having troubles. He's finding it hard to explain about his past doings in North Africa, and at the same time, he's finding it just as hard to explain his wife's interest in the local playboy, nightclub owner Lauren Oliver.
Yeah.
He got so mad at the Stark Club... Oh, I was there. He got so mad at the Stark Club last night that he took a poke at your columnist and then tried to beat up Lauren Oliver. Will this lead to a rematch between Oliver and Sears?
We're having a whole bunch of them picked up.
Walt, before you do that, give me a couple of hours, will you? Try to dig up the killer?
I can't. You know what we've got to do. It's routine.
Well, the commissioner's already having fits every time he hears my name.
Now, look,
Rick. Walt, I got a business to protect. And if he finds out the stiff was killed in my office, he'll probably haul in my license.
Yeah. 1 hour, Rick. That's all I can give you. I got a job, too.
Oh, thanks, Walt.
I suppose you've got an alibi for 1 o'clock?
Call Helen. We were toasting marshmallows. Well, I had 3 good suspects. Lauren Oliver, Cello, the columnist, and Mrs. Sears. One of the 3 was built just right for the electric chair. An hour isn't much time to dig up a killer, so I grabbed a cab and headed for Lauren Oliver's office in the back of his club.
Yeah, come in.
How are you, Oliver?
Oh, what do you want, Diamond? Not particular about who comes into my club.
Oh, I'm surprised you can operate with that kind of policy. People probably see you in here every night.
I think I'll have you thrown out.
Where were you at 1 o'clock this morning?
None of your business. Herman?
Yeah, boss?
Come in here and show a guy out of my office.
Oh, we get rough, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll let you tell the cops who knocked off Fred Sears.
Hey, this is the guy, boss?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Did you say someone knocked off Fred Sears?
That's right, but don't start crying about it. It makes me feel so helpless.
I'll tell my story to the cops.
They'll get a lot tougher than I will.
You won't get tough at all, Mac.
Oh, stop flexing, Herman. You'll snap your girdle.
Well, I guess it doesn't make much difference as long as Sears is dead. I was with his wife from about 12 o'clock it was a long time after 1.
Well, where were you all that time?
At my place. And I'll take a walk, Shamus. You got my alibi.
One more question. Did you go out at all?
Yeah, I went out and got the late papers. So what? I like to read.
Okay. You don't mind if I stop by and see Mrs. Sears, do you?
No, go ahead.
I'll see you later. Oh, Herman.
Yeah?
You can let the air out now. Your muscles are lovely. Well, Oliver had a good story if it checked. So that left me with 2 more stops. Cello's newspaper office was the closest, so I grabbed another cab, and 10 minutes later, I was sitting at his desk.
Oh, you don't think I had anything to do with it, do you, Diamond?
Where were you at 1 this morning?
I was covering a party at Richard Gray's. I was with friends from about 11 o'clock till after 3. You can check. Go on, check.
Look, Poison Pen, Sears had your column from the late edition clenched in his hand.
He did, huh? Well, you don't think if I was going to kill a man, I'd leave anything like that around?
I don't know.
Well, obviously, someone is trying to make it look like I did it. Have you talked with Oliver and Sears' wife?
Oliver's got an alibi, and I'm headed for Mrs. Sears' place right now. You know the address?
Yes, yeah. 45 East 65th. But Mrs. Sears couldn't kill her husband. I know it too well.
No? Well, thanks, Cello. I'll check your alibi. If it stands up, then I'll have to really go to work on Mrs. Sears.
Yes?
Mrs. Sears?
Yes.
Oh, you look even better up close.
What's on your mind?
You mean right this minute?
Well, aren't you nice? Don't crowd me, though. I can keep up a pretty good average in this league.
I'd say about 1,000. Mm-hmm. May I come in?
I think so, if you keep talking. I like to hear nice things.
You deserve them. But I can think of some nice things to say about a panther.
We'll talk about my family some other time. Can I buy you a drink?
It's a little early, unless you got some milk.
Milk?
Where's your husband?
Oh, you know about him, huh? Oh, I'm sorry. It looked as though it might work into quite a friendship.
Where is he?
I haven't seen him since last night. Why? Is he a friend of yours?
He's been using my office.
Oh?
Yeah, he died there last night.
What?
Everybody is so surprised.
But, how? Who did it?
That's what I'm trying to find out, lover. Where were you at 1 a.m.?
That's none of your business.
Okay, let the law drag it out of you. Goodbye, dear.
Wait a minute. All right, I'll tell you. I was with a man named Oliver, Lorne Oliver.
Oh, for how long?
From about 12 o'clock to, well, much later.
That's what Oliver says. Did you go out at all?
Just to get the papers.
That checks with Oliver's story, too. Did you go out alone?
Why, No, I went with Lorne.
He says he went out alone.
Oh, well, yes, he did.
I thought you said you went out with him.
Well, that was later. Lorne was the one that went out to get the papers.
Okay, what time is it?
About 2.
When you both went out or when Lorne went out to get the papers by himself?
When Lorne went out.
Oh, yes. Now I see. Well, I'll see you later.
Come back again.
Oh, I'll do that after you get over crying for your late husband.
I'll keep my emotions down to a minimum.
I'll bet you will. I left her standing in the middle of the room, looking after me like a vegetarian with an eye on a green salad. I closed the door and started down the hall for the elevators. For some reason, I never seem to get where I'm going.
Hello. While you're still tuned in, Diamond, I'll give you some advice. Stay away from Mrs. Sears. Now I want you to be sure and get the point. Rick, come on, snap out of it.
I'll go away.
Come on, you don't look so good.
It matches the way I feel. Oh, here's a new line. Where am I, Walt?
In Mrs. Sears' apartment.
Hello, handsome.
She heard the scuffle in the hall, came out, found you, and called me.
Swell.
Who did it?
I didn't see him, but his voice sounded like a thug that Lorne Oliver keeps around the patty cake with.
Oh, that was probably Herman. Lorne is so jealous.
Well, your hour is up, and now I'm going to haul them all in, including this Herman.
Oh, do you know Herman, Walt?
Sure, Herman Sharp. Got a record a mile long.
Walt, if a guy wanted to hire a killer, where would he go?
You know all the stoolies as well as I do.
Yeah. Mrs. Sears, what was the fight about last night at the Stork?
Oh, a columnist named Cello threatened my husband that he was going to print something in his paper. He said something about North Africa, and Fred hit him.
North Africa? This is really getting mixed up. Was your husband ever in North Africa?
Yes, during the war. He was a captain in the army.
Walt, can you get me this Herman Sharp's address? He's the boy I want.
Sure, but I'm coming along.
Have your boys pick up Cello, Oliver, and take them both down to the station along with Mrs. Sears here.
Well, you don't think I had anything to do with it, do you?
I've known Jimmy Cello a long time. About 5 years ago, he used to run around with a little dancer named Mary Carroll.
Sure he did. I'm Mary Carroll, but I broke up with him when I met Fred.
Yeah. Well, you'll see him at the station. You can pick up where you left off. Come on, Walt. We went down fast and climbed into the prowl car. Walt put in a call and got Herman's address over the two-way radio. 20 minutes later, we were standing in front of Herman's door. It was an old apartment house on the Lower East Side. I started for the door, but Walt had other ideas.
Rick, we can't go in there.
Why not?
Because I haven't got a search warrant.
Well, you gotta go in if you want to crack this case.
Not without a search warrant.
Search warrant for what?
To go in.
What do you want to go in for?
I don't want to go in. You do.
Do what?
Go in.
Well, go ahead.
I haven't got a warrant.
Well, what are you looking for?
Herman Sharp.
He's probably in there.
He is?
Sure.
Well, what are we waiting for? Oh, what did I do that for?
For that.
What?
Herman Sharp.
Oh.
Is he dead?
Yeah, been shot. What are you looking at?
Newspaper on the floor. This morning's. Huh. Cello's column's missing, been torn out.
Then Herman's your killer.
Swell, who killed Herman?
Don't you know?
I'm not going to start that again. Walt, go on back to the station. I'm going to check something and make a phone call. I'll be down in half an hour and point out your killer.
This is ridiculous. I want my lawyer.
You'll get one later.
Relax, Oliver. They can't hold it much longer. How do you feel, Mary?
I don't like this any more than you do.
Well, good afternoon. And happy Father's Day.
Oh. Rick, where the devil have you been?
Made a phone call to Washington, Walt. Mrs. Sears, did you know that your husband had a dishonorable discharge from the Army?
Why, no.
You knew it, didn't you, Cello?
That's right, but I kept it quiet. He got it for running a black market.
What's this got to do with the death of Sears?
Oliver, you told me you went out to get the papers last night.
That's right.
What time was it?
A little after 2. You know what time the late edition comes out.
How about you, Mrs. Sears?
What Lorne says is correct.
How about it, Lorne? Were you the one to go out and get the papers?
Yes.
Then, Mrs. Sears, why did you tell me this afternoon that you also went out to get the papers?
Well, I...
Mary, don't say anything.
You don't have to. The stories don't check, so you couldn't have been together last night.
Look, Diamond, what is this...
Now you look, Oliver. You're both liars. But that doesn't make either one of you the killer.
Oh, but Rick, Cello's alibi checks right down the line.
Sure it does, because he was at that party. But the killer wasn't.
Oh, we know that. He couldn't have been.
Yeah, but the man who hired the killer to knock off Sears was.
What are you talking about, Diamond?
Oliver, where was your hired gun at last night?
You mean Herman?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. He was with me until 6 o'clock, then he left.
Walt, when you find Herman's gun, ballistics will probably say that it was the one that did the job on Sears.
Herman?
Yeah. Cello, you hired Herman to kill Sears, and then you killed Herman.
You're out of your mind. I didn't even know this Herman.
We found the newspaper next to Herman's body. It had your column torn out of it.
That doesn't pin anything on me. It just shows you that Herman probably stuck that article in Sears' hand after tearing it out of a newspaper.
That's what you wanted to make it look like. You knew Herman. You knew about the clipping, so you killed him and tore the column out of this morning's newspaper.
Of course I knew about the clipping. You told me about it this morning in my office.
That's right. But you were the only one I told about it.
You couldn't convict Jack the Ripper on that kind of evidence.
I'm afraid he's right, Rick.
Hello. What time does the late edition come out?
About 2 o'clock.
Walt. What time was Sears killed?
Around 1. Say.
Yeah. The killer couldn't have gotten hold of that column at 1 o'clock. The papers weren't even out on the street.
Well, then how did he do it?
Only one man could have gotten that column before 1 a.m., the man who wrote it.
Jimmy.
He tore it out of the galley sheets. The proofs that are made up before the paper goes to press. Cello hired Herman, gave him the clippings, and then went to the party.
Oh, you're doing great, Diamond. Keep it up.
You're still in love with Mary Sears. You were jealous of Oliver, so you hired Oliver's boy, Herman, figuring the cops would pin Sears' murder on Oliver. How am I doing?
You're a good liar and a rotten detective.
You knew I'd go to see Mary Sears, so you sent Herman to beat me up and make it look like Oliver was behind it.
What?
You tried to frame Oliver all along the line.
Why, you cheap little scandal snooper. I'll fix it so you don't blame anybody.
Wait a minute.
All right, break it up. Come on. Break it up. Hey, Walt.
What is it, Rick?
Bye.
Good evening, Mr. Diamond.
Evening, Francis. Miss Asherin?
Yes, sir. She's in the library. She's a little tired from last night. I think she's taking a nap.
Well, I'll walk on my tippy toes. How about a glass of warm milk, Francis? I'm a little tired, too.
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
Well, look at the little baby.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, isn't he rain? Poor little tired baby. The evening breeze caressed the trees tenderly. The trembling trees embrace the breeze tenderly.
Hello, baby.
Don't stop.
All right. Close your pretty eyes. Then you and I came wandering by.
How wonderful.
And lost in a sigh were we.
Ricky.
The shore was kissed by sea and mist tenderly.
Ricky.
I can't forget how two hearts met breathlessly.
Ricky, come here.
Your arms opened wide and closed me inside.
Ricky, come here.
What is it, dear?
Just this.
Here's your milk, mister. Oh, my goodness. Now, this time I refuse to blush.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg, Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Hi Averback, Joan Banks, Polly Bear, and Sidney Miller. Music was under the direction of David Baskerville. Richard Diamond is written by Blake Edwards and directed by William P. Rousseau. Now, this is Eddie King inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. This program has come to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's Richard Diamond, Private Detective, June 19th, 1949, the Fred Sears case starring Dick Powell. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, David Jennings. It is 12:07 on a Sunday morning. It's good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Mike, and good morning, Shane. And this is the WGN Radio Theater. It's hour two. And we'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. in the morning here on Radio 720 WGN, the legendary Radio 720 WGN. Right, Lisa?
I think that makes you a legend.
Oh, yeah, in my own mind.
That's right. That was my next line.
We play all your classic radio favorites, The Shadow and Jack Benny, Boston Blackie, The Whistler, Inner Sanctum Lights Out, Gunsmoke, Dragnet. We play all those great radio shows from the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, and we have them for you here, six shows every weekend on 720 WGN. Tell a friend and make sure you don't miss a single episode here. This is a program, what did I say it was?
52.
52 or 53? Hang on a second. 50 what? 53. We're on 53, Lisa.
53.
Can that be possible? We're on episode 53.
Yeah.
Shane said, so it is.
It must be right.
Yeah.
Unless you typed it wrong.
No, I didn't type it wrong. So in this hour, we're going to tune into, I think, one of the funniest radio shows of all time, Duffy's Tavern. We'll tell you a little bit more about it. And then in our third hour, leading us up from 1 till 2 a.m., we're going to tune into The Lives of Harry Lime, starring Orson Welles. He did a lot of radio, Orson Welles, and this was a show that he starred in 1951 and 1952. All of this is brought to you in part by our sponsor, Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
Independent. Independence Day Resurgence is an upcoming science fiction film, the sequel to the 1996 film Independence Day, and stars this actor who reprises his role as David Levinson.
All right, so you're going to win a gift certificate to Lou Malnati's Pizza, $25.
Or a gift card.
Yeah, all right. So if you can tell us who the actor starring in the Independence 2 film, the number is 312-981-7200. Now, here's a hint. You'll hear him in this audio clip from 1986's sci-fi film, The Fly.
Human teleportation, molecular decimation, breakdown, and reformation is inherently purging.
All right, if you know who that is, call us right now, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
At 6:35, quite compelling what the human-animal bond can lead to. With Dr. David Williams of Pet Partners.
Steve Dale's Pet World, later this morning at 6:30.
I'm Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Yesterday, Cliff Sora shared a top 10 list of hot fusion restaurants, a vegan gluten-free mashup recipe, and a podcast featuring organic food trends. Oh, TMI? Too much internet information. That's oversharing. Cliff, Geico has something worth sharing with your friends. Like how on Geico.com you could save hundreds on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim. Gluten-free info that's easy to swallow. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hi, I'm Bernadette Janae from Old Navy's design team. You wear jeans, but when's the last time you tried our jeans? Because we've been busy designing our best jeans ever with a fit that just won't quit. We're so confident you'll love them, we'll pay you $5 just to try them on. Now through Sunday at Old Navy, it's the Denim Try-On-a-thon. Try on a pair of jeans and we'll give you $5 off a purchase of $35 or more. So run to Old Navy. Your new favorite jeans are waiting for you.
Valid 218 to 221. Excludes consumables, gift cards, clearance, jewelry, beauty. See stores for details.
Hey, welcome to Burger King.
What do you got going on with the 2-for-5 deal today?
How about Burger King's new extra long buttery cheeseburger, just 2 for $5? It's 2 beef patties side by side, topped with veggies and a rich buttery sauce on a toasted bun.
Hold up. Oh, that's 2 for $5?
Yeah, or you can mix and match with other great sandwiches, like our new extra long fish sandwich, all part of Burger King's 2-for-$5 deal.
I gotta get the deal.
Yes, you do, big winner.
The new extra long buttery cheeseburger, now part of the 2-for-$5 deal, only at Burger King. Limited time only, price of participation vary.
If your wiper blades are worn and streaking, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and save $8 instantly on a pair of Trico Force wiper blades. Improve visibility and save money with Trico Force wiper blades. Plus, take advantage of O'Reilly Auto Parts' free wiper blade installation. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Limits apply. See store for details.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
When it comes to heart and vascular care, choosing the best just got easier. Mercy Hospital continues to be the front runner in the diagnosis and treatment of heart and vascular care for Chicagoans. Mercy expert physicians don't just focus on the heart. They assess the whole vascular system, offering higher quality and more comprehensive care for you and your family. Choose Mercy and care for your heart with one of our customized heart screenings. Discover more at mercy-chicago.org/heart.
The door is open, come play outside.
It's your vacation, your way, in Greater Fort Lauderdale.
A destination warm and bright. Gotta get away.
Enjoy everything from laid-back beaches, bonfires, dock-and-dine restaurants, and an indie music hub. Palm trees and warm breezes are a better way to chill in Greater Fort Lauderdale. Let's go. Visit sunny.org/let's go. That's sunny.org/let's go.
This week, make sure the doctor is on call because Brittany and Elliot are deep frying their way through Chicago in search of the best fried foods. Chicago's Best, Sunday nights at 10 on WGN-TV.
We are back with the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
Human teleportation, molecular decimation, breakdown, and reformation is inherently purging.
And we have Val on the line from Chicago. Hey, Val.
Hey, how are you?
Great. Do you know who that voice is?
Yeah, that's Jeff Goldblum.
You are right. And guess what, Val? You know what you've won? A Lou Malnati's gift certificate, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Val, thanks so much for calling in and hope you have a delicious pizza on us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Val. Appreciate it. All right, it's time for a great comedy, Duffy's Tavern. It came to radio in 1940. Duffy's Tavern, Lisa, was a flea-infested dive on 3rd and 23rd Streets in New York City, where the elite meet to eat. And Ed Gardner was Archie, the manager of the tavern. He also created the show. And Duffy, who owned the tavern, was an absentee owner. He never showed up. He just left it to Archie to run. And he had a daughter, though. She was a man-hungry daughter named Miss Duffy, played by Shirley Booth originally, and then Florence Halep and Sandra Gould. The regular characters on the show were Eddie the waiter, Clancy the cop, and they also had guest stars many, many times. Now, here's something very interesting. One of the head writers was Abe Burrows. You know who his son was? Jim Burrows. And Jim Burrows created Cheers. And so his dad was a head writer on a radio series about a tavern on radio. And then, you know, he just expanded it for television.
Yeah, certainly a lot of similarities between the
two. Very, very cool, right? Larry Marks was also a writer. And Larry Gelbart, famous writer. And then Dick Martin of Rowan and Martin were all writers on this show. It's time now for a terrific episode. Let's go back to February 16th, 1949. It's called Archie's Old Schoolmate Visits. It stars Ed Gardner. Here's part one of Duffy's Tavern.
Touche, the hand lotion with the before hand extra, and Vitalis for well-groomed hair bring you Duffy's Tavern, starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern, where the elite meet to eat. Archie, the manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. Oh, nothing new. The letter carrier was just in, delivered a stack of poison pen letters. Yeah, bills. Well, so much for the bulk of the mail. Now for the complaints. There's a letter here from the Department of Sanitation. Yeah, they say we'll have to do something about the garbage, Duffy. Yeah, they claim it ate a hole through the bottom of their truck. Well, look, I'll call you back. What else have we got, Eddie?
Well, yeah, a personal letter to you from the finance company.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they say if you don't settle up right away, they're going to throw you in jail.
Oh, yeah? What else did they say?
I don't know. I ain't opened it yet.
Them finance companies, when you first go to them, they're as sweet as pie. Just overlook a couple of years' payments and you find out their real character. Hey, wait a minute. Look here. A letter from the Ritz-Carlton. Hey, who do I know lives at the Ritz-Carlton? Let's see. Yeah, dear Archie, haven't seen you since our old days at PS4, but have often thought about you. Many's the time I think about our old class motto, sick in hoc transit hospice.
What does that mean?
Nothing, it's Latin. It was our class code. We'll be down to see you at the tavern tonight. Signed, your old classmate, Willie Gundig. Willie Gundig, I wonder if I'll recognize him. It's been such a long time since I was in school.
Yeah, and you were there such a short time.
Willie Gundig, living at the Ritz-Carlton.
Good friend of yours?
Well, no, him and me never hit it off too good, Eddie. He was always rubbing it in because he got better marks than me. But I happened to know it was because he cheated.
Cheated?
Yeah, he studied. Living at the Ritz-Carlton. I never could stand that guy. Always thought he was such a big shot just because his old man owned his own push cart. Always walking around with his nose in the air like he was smelling something bad. Hello, Finnegan. Finnegan, guess who I just got a letter from?
General Smuts?
No.
Well, then I give up. Look, I...
Can you give me a clue?
Well, okay, he was in PS4 with us, and his initials is WG.
George Washington?
Wrong again, Finnegan. It's Willie Gundy.
Willie Gundy.
You remember him. Remember the guy was always being punished for putting the girl's hair in the inkwells, tying the cans on dogs' tails, putting tacks on the teacher's chair?
Yeah.
Well, Willie Gundy was the guy that always squealed on me.
Oh, that Willie Gundy.
Yeah. The guy the yearbook said was the most likely to succeed. Hey, wait a minute. I wonder if I still got that yearbook here in the safe.
Good old P.S. P.S. 4? Yeah, 4. Wonderful school. What memories it brings back.
Them were the good old days, huh?
Yeah, they don't make days like that no more.
Well, here we are, Finnegan, our old yearbook. Hey, look at this picture here. Remember these guys?
No.
You don't?
No, that was the graduating class.
Yeah, but look at them now, huh? What a tough bunch of kids that was.
Really tough, huh?
Eddie, we used to eat the apples and bring the teacher the worms. Yes, any kid that was in PS4 didn't have a broken nose was either the principal or a new pupil.
That's it. How come the kids are standing around in the shirt sleeves with all that snow on the ground?
Eddie, that ain't snow. That's teeth.
Tell me something. Who's the girl on the end with the black eye?
The teacher. Hey, wait a minute. There he is.
Who?
That jerk, that Willie Gundy.
I see. Well, it says, yeah, he was voted the student most likely to succeed.
Yeah.
Well, where's your picture, Miss Archer?
Somewhere there. It's hardly worth looking for, though. It was a very bad picture.
Hey, wait a minute, Arch. Here it is on the next page.
Anybody want to see pictures of the girls' volleyball team?
No. We want to see your picture.
Oh, well, here it is.
Miss Archer, your thumb.
What about it?
It's covering what you was most likely to.
Oh. Sorry.
What does it say, Eddie?
Archer, the man most likely to be a failure.
Must have been a misprint.
I don't know. Willie Gundy's living at the Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah, you know, I'm just thinking. I bet you that Willie Gundy himself wrote them most likely to's there. He's always jealous of me, you know, because of me and Alice Vanderwater.
Alice Vanderwater?
Yeah, the prettiest girl in the school.
Oh, yeah, I remember her, Arch. The tall, skinny, bow-legged dame with the buck teeth.
Okay, so she was the second prettiest girl in school.
Yeah.
Oh, funny thing. I just ran into Alice Vanderwater the other day over on Avenue A.
Oh, really, Miss Duffy?
Yeah.
Is she married?
Yeah. She married Elmer Zinser.
Elmer Zinser?
Yeah. And guess what? They got 15 kids.
15 kids?
Yeah. But I don't think she's very happy.
Tell me, why?
She says she can't stand Elmer.
Hey, wait a minute, Art. Ain't this my picture?
Where? Oh, yeah. Finnegan, what was you doing with the debating team?
Arch, what do you think they was debating about?
Hey, wait a minute. Here's one that brings back old memories, though. The old baseball team. We sure had a great ball team that year, didn't we, Finnegan?
Yeah, boy, I'll say. Look, there's Lefty Schultz, a first baseman.
Yeah, and Lefty Ryan, a shortstop.
Yeah, Lefty McManus, the catcher. Lefty Shapiro, the center fielder.
Yeah. Georgie Baker, the third baseman.
Georgie Baker? How come he wasn't left-handed?
He was. We just ran out of nicknames. By the way, Finnegan, tell Eddie who was the star of that team.
Oh, you tell him, boy.
Well, I don't like to brag.
Oh, come on, Lefty, tell me.
Well, Eddie, I'll never forget the day we played PS6 for the Division C championship. Get this, Eddie. Get the drama. I'm pitching for PS4, see? It's the ninth inning. There's two out, and the bags is loaded, see? Up to the plate comes home run Feigenbaum. The heaviest hitter on PS6. So I give him a cool look in the eye for a couple of minutes, and I start me wind-up, see? Eddie, I threw three straight strikes at him. The guy never got his bat off his shoulder. I'm telling you, the crowd went nuts.
That strikeout won the game for PS4, huh?
Not exactly. They nosed us out 43-0. All on account of that Willie Gundig dropping that high fly in the second inning. The guy most likely to succeed. Happens a lot of other PS4 guys succeeded, too.
Oh, Archie, stop bragging. You know that PS4 turned out nothing but bums.
Oh, yeah? What about Al Peters, for instance?
Who's he?
Only the chief herring salter at the Fulton Fish Market. And what about Henry Shaw?
Another success?
Merely the head of the Will Call Department of Feinberg's Tiny Tots Toggery Shop. And what about Gus Christopoulos, the famous television actor?
A famous television actor?
Ain't lost a fall in 15 straight bouts. And they pick Willie Gundig as the most likely to succeed.
Hey, Miss Archie, here come Joe Moran, the radio announcer. Hey, wasn't he one of your pals at PS4?
Oh, sure. Hiya, Joe.
Hiya, Lefty.
Hey, Joe, we were just going over the old yearbook here. You remember Willie Gundig,
Willie Gundig? Yeah. Whatever happened to him?
He's, living at the Ritz-Carlton.
Say, that's swell. I'm always glad to hear that one of the old gang made good.
Yeah, me too.
Say, I wonder if Willie knows that I am now a radio announcer.
Well, if he don't, I'll break it to him gentle. I'll tell him first that you're dead.
All right, that's the first portion of Duffy's Tavern going back to February 16th, 1949. Archie's old schoolmate visits with Ed Gardner as Archie the manager. Also in the cast, Eddie Green, Charlie Cantor, Florence Hallop, as Miss Duffy, and Alan Reed, who was the voice of Fred Flintstone. You'll hear him as Clancy the Cop coming up in the next portion here of Duffy's Tavern. It's heard on NBC. And let's see, what's the lineup for this this morning? We have the conclusion to Duffy's Tavern after the news. And then in our third hour, Lisa, what are we playing?
We have The Lives of Harry Lime from August 31st, 1951, starring Orson Welles the Great.
And the title of it is Voodoo.
You are a voodoo.
And all right, so that's the lineup. And then we'll be back here tomorrow. Well, actually, tonight. We'll be back here tonight. I get that confused.
At what time, Carl?
11 p.m.
11 p.m.
We're back here
right
in like 20-something hours to play three more hours of classic radio. But right now, let's pay some bills, and we'll be back on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Lisa Wolf to my right. Mike Estella's here. He's our executive producer. And Shane Reardon is our producer in the booth, hitting all the right buttons. And Lisa, in this half of the hour, we're going to tune into the conclusion of Duffy's Tavern. Then in our next hour, it's The Lives of Harry Lime.
Are you looking for a luxury apartment in the northwest suburbs? Riverside Plaza, located in the heart of downtown Algonquin, is exquisitely designed, from the solid bamboo flooring to the European kitchen design. Filled with every imaginable convenience, Riverside Plaza features a club lounge, event room, and fitness center, and is conveniently located near transportation, shopping, and dining. To learn more, call John at 224-268-6343. That's 224-268-6343. Or visit RiversideLux.com. That's LUXE.com. Riverside Plaza, where luxury and beauty come to life.
All right, so we have a drawing,
yes,
and we give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one lucky winner every single month. So, Mike, tell us all about it.
Well, you grab your camera, take a picture of you and your cat, and then provide your name, cat's name, city, and state, and submit all of that to catspridephoto@gmail.com.
All right, and then what happens, Lisa?
I was going to say, I have a hunch that anybody who has a cat already has a picture with their cat.
That's true.
And they can win an entire year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, which is the best on the market. We will be having another drawing right here the end of February. So
right,
that's soon. The months keep flying by. I don't know. It seems like we just had one the end of January, just yesterday or something.
Yeah, a whole year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cat's Pride, comes in here and picks a name randomly from our listeners who have sent in a picture, and you can win. And I'm telling you what, it's not like winning the lotto, you know, where you have millions of people you're up against. It's hundreds of people. So you have a really good chance of winning. And when you send that picture in, that picture gets posted at our Facebook page, right, Mike?
That's
and at
right,
our website.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. All right, it's time now for the conclusion to this February 16th, 1949 edition of Duffy's Tavern.
Hey, Art, is Joe's picture here in the yearbook?
Let's see. Oh, yeah, here you are, Joe.
What a silly picture. Look at me with my mouth wide open.
Yeah, even them days you look like a radio announcer. Look, why do you guys have to open your mouths anyhow, Joe?
What do you mean?
Well, people never listen to them commercials. Why don't you just save your breath and rate them silent for yourself?
But, Arch, if people listened and heard nothing but silence, what would they think?
That radio had at last been perfected.
Oh, look, Arch, that's silly. You mean I should just stand there and move my lips?
Why not? Go ahead, just move your lips and see if I can tell what you're saying.
Well, okay.
Touche is the different hand lotion?
Right.
It not only keeps hands feeling smoother, looking lovelier all the time.
Absolutely right.
Wait a minute, you stuttered a bit. Stuttered a bit? Oh! He stuttered a bit.
Okay, we both stuttered a bit.
Okay, well, what was it you said? We gotta get this thing in here.
All right, you wanna know what I said?
What did you say?
All right. Truche also has a unique beforehand extra that protects hands from chapping.
Okay, try another one.
Right.
As long as Truche is on your hands, they're guarded against painful chapping.
That's right.
Water chapping as well as weather chapping.
Arch, I didn't say that.
Well, I didn't want to make you seem like a blabbermouth. But that's all aside to the point, Joe. Tell me something. Look, when Willie Gundy gets here, what can I do to impress him that I am also a big success?
You could hide.
You know, Arch, you sound like you're sore at Willie Gundy.
Me sore? Why? Just because he's living at the Ritz-Carlton? I'm glad he's a success. Good luck to him. But don't give him too much credit. Don't forget, success is all in the breaks.
What do you mean it's all in the break?
Well, take me. 9 years ago, when I answered Duffy's ad for a busboy.
What about it?
If I had looked 2 inches to the left, I'd have seen that ad for an expert suspension bridge engineer.
What do you know about being a suspension bridge engineer?
What did I know about being a busboy? What I say, it's all in the breaks. Now, look, Eddie. When Willie gets here, I want you to bear me out in one little white lie, huh?
What's the white lie?
I'm gonna tell him I'm a millionaire.
Yeah, then how are you gonna explain to him why you're working as a bartender?
I'm eccentric.
Yeah, but them clothes are yours. How are you gonna explain all them spots?
money stains. Wait a minute. Why couldn't I have me stockbroker come in and tell me what a fortune I just made, huh?
Who's going to be the stockbroker?
Well, let me see. Who could, Eddie, I know what you're thinking, but who else is there? Look, Finnegan.
Yes?
When Willie Gundy gets here tonight, I want you to tell him that you're a big stockbroker from Wall Street, see?
What's Wall Street?
Well, it's sort of an unsocial pyramid club.
Look, Arch, if I'm going to be a broker, shouldn't I know something about stocks?
Believe me, you know as much about them as anybody. But just in case, I'll try to explain to you quickly how the market works here. Yeah? You see, the dollar, or as it was originally known as the wampum, was used as barter until the gold standard came in, see? Now, this change didn't take place just overnight. It took many years of civilization for the dollar to get up to as little value as it has today. Now, to continue, as you probably know...
Art, let's not take anything for granted.
Okay. As you probably don't know...
That's better.
All business is based on money, you see. Now, when you have money, it's called capital. When you're trying to get it, it's called labor. This is what they call the Dow Jones averages. In other words, when you buy stocks and they go up, you get a seat on the stock exchange.
See, but what happens if the stocks go down?
Then you lose your seat.
Well, if you lose your seat, where do you sit?
You sit on a thing called the curb. Any further questions?
Yeah.
What?
How can I be a stockbroker when I can only count up to 10?
With stocks the way they are today, you don't have to count any higher. That is, unless you happen to be Willie Gundig. He'd probably come rolling down here in a big car. Wait a minute, a big car. Eddie, call Mutual 95,000.
Who was that, the laughing Lithuanian or the chuckling Czech?
Eddie, quit making up names. Now, give me the phone. Hello? I'd like to talk to Nick, please. Yes, the giggling Greek. Hello, Nick? This is Archie from Duffy's Tavern. Send over a Cadillac limousine, will you? The money? Look, Nick, if I buy the car, you'll get the money. Okay. Eddie, I don't think that car will look right standing outside the tavern without a chauffeur. I said, I don't think the car will look right standing outside the tavern without a chauffeur.
Now, wait, whoa. See, I was hired as a waiter.
You can also be fired as a waiter. Well?
Will you be needing the car today, sir?
That's better. I'll show that Willie Gundy.
Good afternoon, sir. I'm looking for the gentleman who ordered the new limousine.
I am that millionaire.
You?
You see any other millionaires around? Come on, chauffeur. Leave us go outside and take a look at the car.
Well, there she is, gentlemen. A brand new 1949.
Hot ziggity. Man, with a car like that, I could be the Alley Khan of Harlem.
Just a second, young man. Looks ain't everything, you know. A car is like a dame. It's what's under the hood that counts. If you don't mind, I'd like to check the motor.
Check the motor? Look, bud, this is a 1949 Cadillac.
I am not impressed by sales talk. If you don't mind, I'd like to look over the motor myself.
Okay, if you insist.
Well, let me lift up the hood here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looks like a pretty good motor.
You're looking in the trunk compartment. But the motor is up at the other end of the car.
Oh. Just want to see if you know your business. Now, tell me, is this the model with the hydrochloride clutch?
The what?
Well, I'll try to put it simply. What is the horsepower?
It's 160.
On what basis is that computed?
Well, it's figured on the basis of 550 foot-pounds in 1 second or 33,000 foot-pounds in 1 minute.
I'm afraid you haven't answered my question. What I'm trying to find out is, does this horsepower have Timken bearings?
I give up.
See, Eddie, I got him stumped. Let's see here. Yeah, see, they got a new type carburetor.
Bud, that's the horn.
Oh, well, yes, this is the carburetor over here.
That's the battery.
Wait a minute, here's a cute little gadget. Hey, what's that thing?
That? Like? Well, that mixes gasoline with air to form a vapor that explodes when injected into the cylinders.
Oh, really? What do they call it?
The carburetor.
He was doing better in the trunk racket.
You was in there with me, I think. Look, young man, just leave the car parked here at the curb for a few hours and I'll think it over. By the way, what's the price?
$6,000.
Only 12,000 payments and she's yours.
Yeah, it's worth it, though, just to burn up that Willie Gundy. Well, look, young man, as I say, I'll think it over. Just leave it parked here in front of the tavern for a few hours until I make up my mind, huh?
Okay, but you don't mind if I take the key, do you?
Not at all. Just be sure that you'll leave the price tag on in a prominent place.
What you doing, Mr. Archie?
Hanging up some pictures. Mm-hmm. I'll show that Willie Gundy. Look at this autograph here, Eddie, huh?
Let's see. Sorry, Archie, but I'm marrying for love. Money isn't everything. Signed, Rita Hayworth.
Me, the man most likely to be a failure. Give me another tack, will you?
Yeah, yeah.
I want to hang up this map of the world. Yeah. How's that look, Eddie?
Let's see. To Archie, thanks for the loan, signed, France, Italy, and Great Britain.
And that's the same Archie that was voted the most likely to be a failure. Wait till that guy gets here. Between me stockbroker, me chauffeur, me Cadillac, and them autographs, I'll have that Willie Gundig borrowing money from me. Hey, wait a minute. This looks like him coming in now. Willie?
Archie?
Yeah.
You ain't changed a bit.
I wouldn't say that. So you're Willie Gundig, the man voted most likely to succeed, huh?
That's right, Arch. You remember that, huh?
I certainly did.
Arch, tell me, do you remember the time that...
I remember it very well.
Well, it's great to see you again, Arch.
Thank you. I noticed your letter was wrote on Ritz-Carlton stationery.
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk to you about.
Don't brag about it. There's a couple of other guys that are doing okay, too. Did you see that limousine outside?
Yeah.
It's mine.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're doing so well, Arch. As for me...
Just a second. Oh, James,
Yes, my lord?
Better put the limousine in the garage and get out the convertible. It's beginning to look like rain.
Okay, sire.
James is me chauffeur, you know.
A chauffeur, huh?
Yes. Oh, by the way, James.
Yes, sir?
When I go for my usual drive in the park today, be sure to cover me with me buffalo robe. And take care to tuck me in with the fur side towards me.
What? Why?
Well, you always keep the fur side closest to you, know. It's warmer that way.
Huh? Too bad Buffalo didn't know that.
That'll be all, James. Now, Willie, Enough about my fabulous success. Tell me about yourself.
Well, I'll tell you, Art.
That Cadillac, you know, cost $6,000.
Well, it's as sure a surprise, Arch. You know, I always thought you'd end up... Well, you remember what the yearbook said about you.
Leave us not bark at sleeping dogs. Now, where was we? Yes, you was talking about what a big shot you was.
Well...
Excuse me a minute. Oh, stockbroker, have we heard anything from the Secretary of the Treasury?
Yeah, he says he wants you to send in your taxes. The government needs the money.
How much is me taxes?
$500,000.
Okay, go down to the bank and get it. Wait a minute, forget the bank. Take it out of petty cash. Well, Willie, tell me, how are things with you? Just a second. Oh, stockbroker.
Yeah?
What's the latest on the ticker?
The doctor says not to worry. It's just gas.
My broker was slightly stunned in the crash of 29, you know. But enough about me and my sensational success. Tell me about you, Willie. How you doing?
Well, frankly, Arch, I could use $10.
Oh, stockbroker. What did you say, Willie?
I could use $10.
You mean you're broke?
Yeah.
But how can you be broke and live at the Ritz-Carlton?
I don't live there. I just work there. That is, until yesterday.
Then why did you write your letter on their stationery just to look like a big shot?
Well, I can explain that, Arch.
Willie, if there's anything I hate, it's a phony.
Arch, don't get sore. I just thought maybe for old time's sake you could let me have $10. It wouldn't mean anything much to a guy like you.
Well, I guess not. After all, if I can afford a $6,000 Cadillac, I guess $10 ain't gonna break a man of my means. James.
Find some other means.
You really need the $10, huh, Willie?
I sure could use it.
Okay, kid. Hey, here's $10.
Thanks, Arch. You're still a great guy. And if I run into any of the old gang, I'm sure gonna tell them what you did for me.
Please, just tell the ones with money. Well, nice to have seen you again, Willie. Sick in hot transit hospice.
So long, Arch.
So long, kid. Good old Willie. Nice guy, Eddie. I always liked him. Funny thing with that yearbook, though, huh?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I was the guy voted most likely to be a failure, and here he has to come to me for a lousy $10. Ain't it funny how life sometimes works out?
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And that's Duffy's Tavern from February 16th, 1949. Archie's old schoolmate visit, starring Ed Gardner, and as heard on NBC, a sustained program. No sponsor on that show, Lisa. Mostly Duffy's Tavern was sponsored by Touche and also Blatt's Beer for a while, but this particular episode from 1949, no sponsor. All right, let's take a break. Then it's much more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
What do you call it?
I'm rocking in my
this
chair.
This is like, techno, what is this called?
Music.
I wouldn't call it techno.
What is this?
Maybe some kind of punk grunge.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I listen to all the time.
He's very young.
Shane is showing his age. 26?
23.
23, okay. All right. You know, you just carry yourself a little older than 23.
I appreciate
you know
that.
What I'm saying?
Most people say that.
Yeah, you
I
do.
I get 45 pretty
no,
often with a maturity level of a 67-year-old.
No, but I would have guessed, like, you know, mid-20s there. Lisa? Mid-30s. How's that? That's still a really good compliment.
I was thinking 12,
right?
So, okay.
With a very nice vest on today.
Very nice Oakley vest there. I saw.
Watch out, you guys.
Notice the Oakley vest that I... that I got you, you took back and got something else, right? Is that the...
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about either.
I have no idea.
But this is the WGN Radio Theater. It's where we play classic radio shows every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. in the evening till 2 a.m. in the morning. It's kind of confusing because
we will be back here in very 20 few hours.
20-something hours.
11.
I can't do the math. I don't want to try to do the math.
22 hours.
I don't necessarily trust you that that's when it will be.
That's correct. As if it's 1 a.m. now, we're coming back at 11. That's 2 hours short of an entire 24-hour day.
You have the same argument at 1 a.m. every single Saturday night.
Don't we?
It's 22 hours.
We just like to fight.
It's 22 hours from 1 a.m.
Whatever I say, Shane, he's going to disagree with me. So.
No. And when you give me a compliment, I don't disagree with you.
But I wouldn't do that.
Right. It's very rare. All right. So on this hour, we're going to tune into Orson Welles as Harry Lime in The Lives of Harry Lime. It was a radio series that he starred in back in 1951, and he was living in London at the time, Lisa, and a big radio producer came up to him. His name was Harry Allen Towers and said, hey, why don't you host a radio series for me? And so he did, and we're going to play an episode for you in just a few minutes. But before that, we're going to play our sponsor segment.
It's time for Celebrity School.
The BFG is an upcoming fantasy adventure directed by Steven Spielberg, based on the novel by Roald Dahl, and stars this actor as the Blood Butler.
The Blood Butler?
Bottler. Bottler, like B-O-T-T-L-E-R.
Blood Bottler.
Right,
wow, Bottler. Okay. All right, so if you can guess this actor, you're going to win a $25 gift card to Lou Malnati's Pizza, which is Lisa's favorite pizza. And Mike's, too, and Shane's, too, I think, as well.
Pizza.
All right, so this actor originally started on Saturday Night Live, and here's a scene with him and LeBron James in 2015's Trainwreck.
Why are you trying to always sell me on Cleveland?
When are you going to come to Cleveland?
I'll come when I have the time.
All right, if you know who that is, give us a call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. 981-7200. Give us the name of that celebrity. Win a pizza certificate. We'll find a winner after this break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
Why are you trying to always sell me on Cleveland?
When are you going to come to Cleveland?
I'll come when I have the time.
And let's talk to Harry from Oak Park. Hey, Harry.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
I'm good. So can you tell me who that celebrity is?
Bill Hader.
You are right. Don't be a hater. Sorry.
She couldn't resist.
Harry, you are a winner. You've won a gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza. And you can order online at loumalnati's.com, or you can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Harry, thank you so much for listening, and we appreciate you calling in.
Thanks, Harry. Really appreciate it. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. As Lisa just said, we have The Lives of Harry Lime coming up here in a second. I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a Facebook page, and we would love it if you would go to our Facebook page and like us, because we haven't really mentioned that this morning or last night. We haven't mentioned that we'd really love you to like us, and so please do that, right?
Yeah, we want you to like us on Facebook, but we also want you just to plain old like us.
Right.
But we can also talk to you that way, communicate with us, tell us what you like and what you'd like to hear, and I love talking to all our listeners. So I promise you, if you talk to us, we will... We'll talk back.
Yeah, just do that through Facebook, and please like us. All right, it's time now for The Lives of Harry Lime. This was a drama that Orson Welles starred in. You know, he starred in a movie called The Third Man. It was a 1949 film of the Graham Greene novel, and it was a very popular film. And in the movie, Lime was shot and killed in the sewer beneath Vienna. So when it was asked to do a radio series about The Third Man, they were like, well, how do we do this? You're dead, right? So they thought, well, let's make it a prequel to the series, and we'll call it The Lives of Harry Lime. We won't call it The Third Man. We'll call it The Lives of Harry Lime. And it really encompassed the adventures of a con artist named Harry Lime in a lighter tone than the film. And Welles was terrific in it. It was a part he played in the movies. Now, the Third Man theme is played on a zither by Anton Karas. And, you know, that is our theme to our WGN Radio Theater. People may have not known that we play the Third Man theme. But our theme is by Guy Lombardo, because we did have someone ask us that early
on. Yes,
we did. So it's a Guy Lombardo theme. But now it's time for the Third Man radio series called The Lives of Harry Lime. Let's go back to August 31st, 1951, a program called Voodoo, and this stars Orson Welles in The Lives of Harry Lime.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character originally created in the motion picture The Third Man. With zither music by Anton Karas.
That was the shot that killed Harry Lime. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna. As those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man. Yes, that was the end of Harry Lime. But it was not the beginning. Harry Lime had many lives. And I can recount all of them. How do I know? Very simple. Because my name is Harry Lime. I've known many places and left them, made many friends and lost them, won many fortunes and spent them. My fate seems to be linked to a cosmic yo-yo. This is a story of a low point on one of the yo-yo trips down. This particular low point is known on the map as the island of Haiti. I arrived there as a sort of political refugee. A small revolution I'd been promoting in a nearby banana republic had fizzled out on me, and the general I'd been backed out. I found myself holding the bag. The bag luckily just happened to contain a few rolls of the U.S. Treasury's best letters. So when I descended on Haiti, I did it with style. Then after a while, I spent the style. Don't let anybody tell you about the easy life on these tropical islands. You need dough in paradise, too. Of course, I still had my friends among the natives, but even they had become devoted students of the ruby arts. That is, they took the cash and let the credit go.
And now, Orson Welles is Harry Lime, the Third Man in Voodoo.
I am sorry, Monsieur Harry, no more.
Oh, come on now, George. You've got a clean white cuff there, even for a bartender.
Monsieur Harry, please understand. My boss, he supplied my cuff. I cannot mark it up any further.
George, are you trying to tell me that money makes that much difference to you? Do you prefer that sort of customer to me, that ambassador of ill will over there? The Babbitt who comes to Haiti to find somebody new in Toledo? Or do you prefer...
Monsieur Harry, I prefer you.
Oh, merci, old man.
The native on this island prefers Monsieur Harry.
Well, that is settled, huh?
But the boss, he prefers his customer with the money.
Well, I should have known. Somehow, George, it never occurred to me that you'd sell out like the rest, go commercial. But, well, you've been trapped too, George. Cornered, impaled on the almighty dollar sign.
No, mon ami,
I'm George, it's getting late. Time for me to move on, I guess.
That's your greatest fault, Harry Lime. Always moving on.
Hmm? What?
And it's always getting so late.
Dorna.
Hello, Harry, darling.
Dorna, you beautiful, wonderful witch.
Oh.
What are you doing?
Let's not be trite, Harry. I could ask you the same question.
Okay, then. Whom are you doing here?
Harry, darling. 3 years haven't changed you a bit.
Well, who is he? That one?
No. Over there. The seersucker suit.
Oh, no, Dorna.
Oh, he's really quite charming, Harry.
Charming, eh? He's an oaf. I don't like the way he laughs.
Oh, you'd adore him, darling. He pinches waitresses, collects souvenirs, collects money, too.
Ah, I might have known. It's with you. Well, let's meet him.
Now, Harry.
To you, Mansell. Oh, and, George, you might tell your boss that Harry Lime is on the preferred list again. I spent several pleasant moments following Dorna to the booth. As she snaked her way adroitly between the tables, it was difficult for me to focus my attention on her. Mark,
Mark, in this case, was fat and perspiring. Of course, he was bald. His contributions to the aromas of the cafe were generous. His cigars, perspiration, and his money.
Sam?
Huh? Oh, hiya, baby. I was just going to send out a searching party for you.
Sam, I'd like you to meet an old friend of mine, yeah? Harry Lime. Sam Torkin.
Oh, very happy to meet you, Mr. Torkin.
Oh, sit down, sit down. Any friend of Dorna's is a friend of mine. Well, within reason, of course. You from the States, too, Larry?
Harry, Sam. Harry Lime.
Huh? Oh, yeah, Harry. Hey, what part of the States you from?
I'm from Toledo.
Toledo.
Yeah.
You know, one of my plants is in Toledo. A drink. Yeah, have a drink. Waiter, bring my friend a drink. Toledo, eh? Great little town.
Yes, sir.
Of course, to me, any town is a great town as long as business is good.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, this is my first vacation in 18 years. 18 years. Can you imagine that?
He gambled. For eternities, he gambled. Dorna was obviously amused by my boredom, but my patience has always had a price. Torkin kept gambling, so I almost considered reducing that price, and then he gave me my cue.
Sure is hot in these parts. Well, baby, come on. Let's go out of this dump and find some souvenirs.
Oh, Sam, not again.
Now, what sort of souvenirs are you looking for, Mr. Torkin?
Hmm? Oh, I don't know. The souvenirs are... Well, souvenirs, ain't they? Now, come on, beautiful. Let's...
Souvenirs can be more than souvenirs, Mr. Torkin.
No, I'm what kind of talk is that?
Now, look, Mr. Torkin, you're a man of taste and means.
Hey, sales pitch. Hey, what are you selling, Lime?
Yes, Harry, what are you selling?
I'm selling nothing. Nothing but plain, ordinary common sense. It's at a premium on this island, Mr. Torkin.
Yeah?
Well, let him finish it.
About Haiti, both of you. This island is steeped in sentiment. Not our kind, not the lace trim sort of thing. Sentiment here is a wild, untamed, primitive love, a sense of possession that defies the laws of man and nature. Now, listen to those drums, Torkin. Listen. They're telling you the secrets of Haiti.
Huh? Do you understand them, Harry?
As much as any civilized man is permitted to.
That's that voodoo stuff, ain't it?
Well, they're not stuff, Torkin. Those drums are calling for the voodoo gods to smile upon the wedding of a native man and his beloved. The wedding rites are just beginning. They'll continue till dawn. The wedding of Fancy and Grigri.
Who?
Fancy works as a waiter in a hotel here in town. His father got in a jam once he got planted, and I just happened to save his neck. That counts for something here in Haiti. Oh, that reminds me. If you'll excuse me.
Hey, where you
going? I'm going to the wedding. You're going up there?
Oh, take us with you.
Well, I wish I could, Dorna. Well...
Hey, wait a minute now. Sit down, sit down. Now, what about all this sentiment and souvenirs and all that?
Well, all right. Look, Haiti is crawling with priceless relics, anthropological prizes, historical symbols. They bring fantastic prices from any museum in the States.
Oh, where do they sell them?
They're not selling them, Dorna. We've got another island and another people to find them.
Well, how come they're worth so much?
Sentiment, old man, sentiment. The voodoo brand. The natives protect their sacred symbols with their lives. Well, of course, they're the raw materials.
Huh?
Little sentimental trinkets, diamonds, rubies, sapphires, miscellaneous baubles. The kind of sentiment we understand.
Oh, I love souvenirs like that.
Well, okay, Lime. I guess you can get me one of them baubles.
Yes, that's possible.
Now, what's your deal?
Well, first, let me find a suitable trinket. Time enough then to bargain. For now, Mr. Torkin, a small retainer will do.
Huh? Mm. Oh, yeah, well, then, how much?
Oh, as you wish. But, as those drums would tell you, sentiment comes high in Haiti. I had a feeling that Dorna would keep Sam Torkin well occupied for the present. The future, of course, I'd handle in my own way. And in the meantime, nothing to worry about except keeping a date was... two old friends. I found my friends in the floor. And seemingly, the head of the ceremonial party of place of honor has befitted them.
Monsieur Harry, we don't think you ever come.
Oh, I wouldn't have missed it, Fancy. You and Grigri are my favorite people.
But thank you. You are kind.
You say that so often, Grigri. I almost believe you. Yes, I wish you both much happiness.
Merci.
We will be happy always when we have friends like Harry Lyme. You have done so much for us. Our family, we cannot forget you.
That's so, ma'am. You go far with a wife like this. She says all the right things.
It is the time.
No, the marriage ceremony?
Oh, no, no. We are married already.
It is the moment to pledge ourselves to the authority.
It is a tribal custom.
Fancy. Please, Ari, these are tribal secrets.
Oh, you don't trust your friend with secrets.
You can trust no one with these secrets.
That's what's happening. What's that?
It is the authority, the scepter, the sacred scepter of Henri Cristo.
The scepter of Henri Cristo. Well, here was the souvenir for Tolkien.
And that's the first portion of The Lives of Harry Lime from August 31st, 1951, a show called Voodoo, starring Orson Welles. This was syndicated by Harry Allen Towers out of the BBC. When it came to America, at least, it aired on the Mutual Radio Network. And hope you're enjoying this. We'll get back to The Lives of Harry Lime in just a few minutes. But first, let's pay some bills. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you so much for joining us. We're every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. And we are on the air 6 hours, and we play six classic radio shows for you. This week, we were tuning into Richard Diamond, Private Detective, then Duffy's Tavern. And we're in the midst of tuning into The Lives of Harry Lime. Now tomorrow, or actually tonight at 11 p.m., we're going to tune into Nightbeat starring Frank Lovejoy. We have the Burns and Allen Show, and then a really interesting, scary radio show called Creeps by Night. Right? Creeps by Night.
Which is like me.
It's at night, and I'm a creep, and it's like, this is like my signature show, Creeps by Night.
I wouldn't call you a creep.
No? You've called me lots worse.
No, I have not.
You're so mean to
me. You must be confusing me with Mike.
This is true. All right, so we're going to get back to this now. Let's tune into Orson Welles in Voodoo from August 31st, 1951, the conclusion to The Lives of Harry Lime.
Is this Henri Christophe?
No, talking. You mean to say you never heard of him?
Nah.
Christophe was... Well, he was the George Washington of Haiti.
Oh, every two-bit country's got its own Washington. Get me Washington scepter and I'm interested.
Listen, old man. Christophe started life as a slave. He became Haiti's most powerful ruler. At one point in his regime, talking, he stood off the combined armies of France and England with 2,000 men. On the north side of this island, old man, up near Le Cap.
Huh?
Le Cap, Cap Batien. Tremendous fortress high on the hill, above the jungle. You've seen it, haven't you?
Well, how could I miss it? It's big enough.
One of the biggest. Washington been built that, Tolkien. Christophe did.
So what?
He didn't just order it built. He planned it, designed it, supervised the work, dug rocks out of the mountains with his bare hands. You're a self-made man, Tolkien. That ought to appeal to you.
What about the scepter line?
Look, old man. Henri Christophe is a landlocked saint to these people, an all-powerful earth god. While he lived, his scepter was his symbol of strength. And well, being king in those days was a profitable business, old man. Christophe had more jewels in that scepter than Dorna has curves. And there was a revolt here in Haiti, and Christophe was found dead, but the scepter was gone. For over 100 years, its whereabouts have been kept secret. I know the secret, Torkel. I can get it for you.
Yeah? How?
It's my business. Your business is to make it worth my while.
Okay, Lime. How much this time?
Oh, plenty, old man. Fancy, where are you? Oh, I'm bleeding.
Enter, Ari. Oh, you are welcome in the house of Fancy and Gregory.
My friend, Ari, it is
Fancy, good. I've been looking for you. I've got to talk to you.
Oh, we are always eager to listen.
Fancy, is that scepter? Scepter of all.
Oh.
What's the matter?
Oh, Ari, please, you must not ask. These are secrets of our people.
I've always considered myself one of your people, Gregory.
My friend, Ari, I have told you too much already. Please do not think any more of the scepter. It is forbidden to speak of it.
Forbidden among friends?
Ari, with the scepter, it is different. It is the authority.
Is it?
It is. It is the scepter of Henri Cristo. It is passed on from high priest to high priest. It is never out of their hands. It is the authority. Oh, that is enough to know. Please, ask no more.
Gregory, Would I ask if it weren't important?
No, Ari, please.
I've got to know more about it, Grigory. Fancy, you understand, don't you?
Grigory.
But don't make him say more, Ari, please. Don't make him say more. Please. Please, please.
Yeah, come in. Fancy, come in, old man, come in.
Ari, you do not mind that I come here?
Of course not. Anytime. What's the trouble?
I do not know. It is not my problem.
Really?
When you are at my house today, I see you are great trouble. I try to tell Grigory, but she do not understand.
Trouble me? No, no, wait a minute.
I am tell her you are must have great trouble, or you would not ask for tribal secrets.
Well...
It is all right, Ari. You are my friend. When you are in trouble, I help you.
Oh, well... Well, good. That's the spirit, old man.
You have done much for me and Grigory. This is for you.
Well...
It is the scepter of Ari Kristoff. It is yours. I could do no less.
That's it.
Now.
It's...
You will have no more trouble, Ari.
Well, now, wait a minute. Well, what about you? How did you get this thing, anyway?
It is no matter.
You stole it from the high priest. What if they find out you took it? They won't go to the police.
No.
Won't put you in jail?
No.
Now, what will they do?
They will not put me in jail. They will not go to the police. The priest will be my judge.
Fancy. What will they do?
They will punish me. I will die.
Had I known a man like Fancy earlier in my life, my ideas about all men might just possibly be a little different today. Here was the truest kind of friend. True in the real sense of the word true. He was staking his life, literally. Staking his life on his faith in Harry Lyme. If I rejected his offer of the sacred scepter, I'd have shattered his faith in me. Fancy lived by his faith in his friends. But I did need the scepter. As for friends, well, there are many kinds of friendship.
Harry, tell the truth.
Hmm? Oh, sure. Dawn, I love you. I'm ravishing.
Oh, no. Not that. About the scepter.
No. Mm. Got a cigarette?
Mm-hmm. Here.
Thanks.
Is it really the scepter of Henri Cristo? Think Sam will buy it?
Why not?
Why is it so valuable?
Historical significance, cluster of rubies, big fat sapphire in the middle.
Harry.
Mm-hmm.
What's it really worth?
Oh, 20,000, maybe 25. Move the ashtray over. Hmm?
Bet Talkin would give me 35,000 for it.
Think so?
Mm-hmm. I'm prettier than you.
Right. Well, I have Christoph's scepter.
Darling, if you let me peddle it to Tom.
Dawn, my sweet, I lost you 3 years ago in Madagascar. The scepter might be a temptation if you'd leave me again.
Oh, no. Wouldn't 35,000 be nicer than 25?
Mm-hmm.
Then why don't you let me?
No, the fact is, I don't have a scepter.
What?
Torkin bought it this morning. $50,000.
Harry, you! You!
That's why you lost me in Madagascar. Guess I've got to work on Torkin again. Good old Sam.
Yeah. Good old Sam. Somehow, good old Sam ran a bad second. Dawn was no fool. She wasn't greedy. I was available, and I had money. Not as much as talking, of course, but enough to keep her satisfied temporarily. We decided on a small celebration of sort that requires noisy public demonstrations with champagne bottles. We went to a little cafe, and I rather enjoyed the impression I was making, particularly on George.
Would you like me to put this on your bill, Monsieur?
Oh, no, certainly not, George, certainly not. I wouldn't want to cause any undue strain or suffering for your employer.
But, Monsieur...
Never mind, George, old man. Here, this should cover the situation, I think. Only here's a little something for you.
Thank you, Monsieur. You are...
What's the matter?
You'll excuse me, Mr. Reed. I must go.
Eh?
I'm sorry, I must close the bar.
Close the bar at this time of night? Just a minute.
The drums, Monsieur Reed. You understand? The drums.
The drums? What? Oh, George. It's the death drums.
I do not have to tell you, Monsieur Reed.
Why? What for?
I don't know. You'll excuse me.
Harry, what is it?
I don't know. Those are the death drums. They mean someone's dead or dying. Or going to die.
Going to die? Who?
I don't know. I don't know. I have a hunch. I hope I'm wrong.
Harry! Wait! Where are you going? Harry! Harry!
To the ceremonial grounds, I saw a frenzied sight. Hundreds of natives, still dressed in the tattered dungarees of the cane fields, dancing, shrieking, half hypnotized. And the drums. They were the drums of death, all right. I'm mistaken. As I crashed through the brush, surrounding the clearing, I saw that they'd already taken a life. There was a body, a dead body, strapped to a post in the center of the circle. Sam talking. The voodoo priest danced up and back in front of it, waving curses over it, screaming through the slits in a hideous mask. And in his hand, he held the scepter of Marie Christophe. The scepter that had cost Torkin more than he'd bargained for. I'd had enough. I turned to leave. And then at the far end of the clearing, I saw something else. Two more bodies tied together, back to back. Hanging by their wrists from a long crossbow strung between two trees. The two of them together, Fancy and Gregory, ready to be sacrificed. No! No, wait! Stop! Stop it, I tell you! Listen, all of you, listen! Listen to me! You're making a mistake. You're torturing two innocent people. You can't do it.
They are among us. It was forbidden. They must be punished.
No.
They will die.
Hey, they can't die. You're punishing them for something they didn't do. You think they sold the scepter to this man, but they didn't. I did. I made Fancy tell me about it. I'm the one you want. Listen to me. You've got to believe me.
Harry Lime would not cause their death. Harry Lime is their friend.
But I tell you it was my deal. I'm the guy you want, so untie these ropes. Come on, move, or there'll be a new voodoo priest holding forth at your funeral.
It's no use, Highline. If you kill me, others will take the revenge.
It's no use to kill these two either. Okay, Gregory, you're loose. Help untie Fancy. Okay, I'll do it myself. Hold still, Fancy. There, we're loose. All right, come on. Come on, I'll get you two out of this.
It is too late. You must go.
Now, come on, I'll help you. Now run for it. Stay back, you lunatics, or I'll start knocking off voodoo. I warned you now. Stay back. That's better. Come on, Fancy. Gregory, get going. Well, there goes Haiti, Donna. Another corner of the world chipped off.
You'll be back here.
No. Fancy and Gregory are gone to Cuba. In time people will learn the truth about me. Haiti's through with Harry Lyme.
You're really taking this seriously, aren't you?
After my fashion. They say I messed up your meal ticket too, didn't I?
Sam talking? Poor Sam. Don't worry, Harry. You'll take care of me.
Until the 50,000 is gone.
Well?
That's what I thought. Yeah. Let's have a drink. You're saying that wasn't Harry Lime at all. You're saying the noble hero that pulled off that fancy rescue party wasn't the third man. He was a couple of other guys. Just goes to show how I misjudged. Well, ask Fancy and Grigory, now happily keeping house in a suburb of Havana. They'll tell you it really was Harry Lime that got them out of that whole voodoo mess. Of course, they'll also remind you that I got them into it. And they might possibly mention that as the three of us dashed off into the jungle, I paused just long enough to borrow that scepter back from the high priest. Got a nice price for it, too, from a collector in Brussels. But that's another story. So long now, and if anybody should run into Dorna anywhere, in Timbuktu, for example, or the store club, give her my love. Remind her she owes me about 15,000 hard-earned American bucks, which seem to have slipped out of a hole in my pocket or something. No hard feelings, of course, but if you get a choice between voodoo, hoodoo, and little Dorna, I hope you'll know what to do about it. Take the voodoo every time.
There you have it. Take the voodoo, Lisa, every time.
I'm full of voodoo.
All right, so August 31st, 1951, Orson Welles in The Lives of Harry Lime. Let's take a break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.